Hello and welcome to the Trauma and Mental Health Reports podcast series. We aim to share stories and knowledge on topics related to trauma and mental health with the community. My name is Nikita, and I'd like to welcome our guest for today, Dr. Chloe Paige Eustis-Mitchell. Today we will be discussing her newly published book, The Lost Prescription, which touches upon identity loss during grief. Let's get into today's conversation.
We can start off with you telling us a little bit about yourself and your newly released book, The Lost Prescription, published by HarperCollins.
Hi, Nikita. Thank you. I'm Dr. Chloe Paige Eustis-Mitchell. I am a grief and trauma psychologist. I'm based in London in the UK, and I'm thrilled my book is coming out on the 14th of March this year with HarperCollins, as you said. It's really quite important to me to share as many tools and therapeutic strategies as I can in this book, which is what I've done. And I guess the reason I wrote it, which is something I'm often asked, is, you know, why did you want to do this? And I feel like at the moment, loss is everywhere, certainly since the pandemic. And loss on a micro scale and on a macro scale. So events across the world and lots of excess deaths in the UK, lots of excess illness, lots of chronic illness, recent studies, the UK government are showing that 9 out of 10 professionals are struggling with burnout. So we're talking about a nation, at least in the UK, that is looking for help, that is looking for support. And something that a client said to me once, which stayed with me, was, "I feel absolutely lost in loss. And there's nowhere I can turn to. There isn't a manual, there isn't a handbook that's going to show me how to move through this." So that's what I've tried to do with my book. It's a very practical roadmap to recovery from grief. And what I mean by recovery is learning to tune in, learning to reflect on what meaning is and what personal purpose is, and adapting, kind of reconstructing oneself. And I'm talking a lot, aren't I?
I guess I'm very passionate. Of course not. Yeah, that's important.
Part of my passion is that I suffered my own losses and live with chronic illness myself and know what that kind of loss is like. And just hope to shed a bit of light, give people a bit of hope and lots of practical tips and advice.
That's absolutely amazing. I think you really honed in on an important point where it's like we're feeling lost at a global scale right now, more than ever before, especially, you know, even through our phones now, we can't really escape it either. It's everywhere you look. And I think that's why it's so important that you're doing this. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
And specifically, I want to hone in onto the point that is not often talked about. Like, how can grief lead to identity loss?
Yes, I think that's very important. And I do have a whole section on that in my book, as you've read. Identity loss is, I mean, could talk quite a lot about that, in that when we lose a loved one, or when we cope with a sort of transformational change in our life that impacts our roles, our responsibilities, our routines, our social network, our connections, really does kind of ripple or almost in a lifelong way in terms of how we understand who we are. So when you go through grief, what you can often feel is a sense that you've lost yourself, like a really big part of yourself has disappeared along with your loved one or with your kind of personal change, and you don't really know how to be you. How do you define yourself? For example, if you lose your partner, you're no longer part of a pair, or if you lose your child, you don't stop feeling like a mother or a parent because your child has passed. So learning to reconstruct how you describe yourself and how you tell your story is a really big part of what it is to grieve. And also it can happen on a sort of really layered level. So somebody said to me recently, who lost their best friend from childhood, that with his death went all their shared memories and all those special moments, and he felt like he'd lost a part of himself. So how do we hold on to that? How do we make meaning out of that? So I hope that answers your question. It's very personal. Some people experience more severe identity loss than others, but I think normalizing it and humanizing it is really, really fundamental.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a perfect point. And, so like you said, some people experience it more than others, and it really depends on the person as an individual and also how they feel connected to somebody. Because when you lose someone close to you, you're losing, like you said, those memories that you shared, your role with that person. And so that can definitely be something that's hard to deal with. And in your book, you also mentioned that people tend to be very grief avoidant, and institutions don't really allow that time or space for grief. Like in the UK, there's no bereavement leave or anything like that. So how can people really find the time, the space to accept their grief? How can we become less grief resistant?
That's a very, very good point, and we're certainly working on trying to change policy so that there is better bereavement policy in place for people in employment. I think it has to, it's about normalizing it and humanizing it and not carrying any shame around it. Grief isn't something that I have discussed. I don't think that we can go through grief stages and feel like we've gone through the five or the seven stages and then we're fine. Grief is a lifelong thing. So the more humane, the more we can share in the humanity of loss, the better. The more we can share our stories of loss and how we make sense out of life, how we might embrace life positively, even if we're living in sadness, even if we're living in a state of upset and grief, is I think how we do it. And I do a lot of work going into organizations and just holding an hour's talk about what is grief and how can you feel grief in the face of all sorts of losses, not just by bereavement, but if you're diagnosed with a chronic illness or if you're looking after an elderly person with dementia, let's say, or if you lose your job suddenly, or if you move countries or whatever, there's loss on all sorts of
Of course, yeah.
levels. So the more we can talk about it, the better. But also to listen. I think there's a lot of people that try and fix suffering because they don't want to see it. They feel worried for their loved one. But my experience is that when you go through pain, you literally feel the intense tension, the intense kind of embodied emotional tension of what it is to suffer that severed bond. And the only thing that seems to relieve and release a little bit of that tension is being witnessed by another human being,
Absolutely, yeah. That is an
which is why,
extreme.
why friendships matter, why good connections matter, why empathy is fundamental to relationships, why good therapy works. So being heard, giving yourself permission to be heard empathically and heard, held non-judgmentally, is a really it's a big thing in my experience. But
Absolutely,
you have to be selective. It's the sad truth, because not everybody will be able to perhaps hold the space.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You need that support system. And like you said, we need more empathy. We need more time to just let the feelings sit sometimes. We can't just immediately jump to fix it.
No, and also something else I want to add to to what you asked me, which is a really good question, is that to develop our own awareness. So sometimes I see people in my clinic who are really, really worried that they are doing something wrong or that they are, cracking up in inverted commas, because they're not aware that grief it impacts the whole person. So there's a neurobiochemical kind of reaction to loss, where you feel physical symptoms, they impact you mentally, cognitively, which can disrupt your perceptions. It can disrupt how you make decisions and how you get through the hours of your day, as well as the emotional and the spiritual. So I think when loss hits us, it impacts the whole person. And that's very much my approach in the loss prescription, is breaking it down so that people can check in and say, okay, so what's my loss journey been? What's it? Where do I locate my symptoms and my reactions and my emotional tensions? And all the prescriptions I offer are designed to kind of help people to cherry pick what they feel is right for them, because you can't have a blanket approach where
Of
one
course.
way helps absolutely everybody. It's very, very individual.
I think that is a fantastic way to do it. You offer the tools, you let people pick what is fitting with them. I think that's very important. You, like you said, you can't just have a one size fits all kind of approach to when grief is so each experience is so different from the other. Like you said, sometimes the grief is about losing a person through death, sometimes it's chronic illness. So
Yeah.
it varies a lot. And I think oftentimes we tend to have only one perception of grief, which is like funerals, right? Like when you lose someone permanently. But there are so many different forms of it that we have to address in our life.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think lots of things shape our grief reactions. So your mental health, your physical health, your living conditions, your stress levels, your financial worries, what kind of support you allow yourself to access. Because if you're going through grief and you judge it and you don't talk to a loved one or you don't talk to perhaps peers or a support group, you're isolating yourself. So there are lots of things I think that play out in people's experience of what it is to grieve. And I think there are lots of hidden losses. So, for example, I'm actually Greek. So I was born and bred in Athens. My family are all there. I've lived in the UK for 30 years and I still haven't managed to find a way to not feel bereft at times that I'm not in my own home. I mean, I love the UK. I belong. I'm married an Englishman. I'm happy here, but I miss home and that's a loss. And it's a loss I hadn't, didn't sign up for
Of course.
in some way. So sort of learning to just be open and recognize that it all plays a little part in what it is like for us to be us, you know, as human beings.
That is an absolutely wonderful point that you made. You know, that is not even something that I thought about myself. Like having that you miss your home, you miss where, and sometimes you can also miss things that you might have never had either. For me personally, I came to Canada when I was very young. I moved from Dubai, so I'm actually Indian. I never even grew up in India, didn't spend any time living there, but when I came to Canada, I was very separated from my culture. And so I never quite fully got that full connection. And sometimes I think about it and I see my peers, I'm like, oh, you guys are so well connected with your culture, and I don't have that. So that's
That's a really
amazing to
good
think about.
point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is
Wow.
quite, that's why I say my book's trying to do quite a lot. I hope that I managed to do some of what I hope to achieve. I was talking to another client recently who said, I've kind of accepted the divorce. I've accepted that the partnership wasn't going to work, but she felt that she was moving through her grief. But at the same time, she said, the hardest part that I'm struggling to make sense of or to make my peace with is the loss of the expected life I thought I was going to have. And of course, that's another really big part of what it is to grieve and our identity, going back to what you want to focus on, like who we see ourselves in the future, what we thought we were heading towards that perhaps no longer as possible as we would like. There are so many layers to it that I think the most important thing people can do is tune in, check in and just observe, just notice what you're telling yourself about yourself, how you're writing your own story, and what the themes are, what the destination is for you, or what the direction is, and how you hold yourself with it. It's really all about self-compassion. I think I mentioned self-compassion every second page. Just the value of that, the value of humanity and compassion is a really big thing, and I've seen how it helps people stabilize and how it gives people that sense of I can cope with anything if I can make sense of it, if I can have a really strong reason to move forward in life, and if I do it with love in my heart and in my body and in my mind, you know.
You know, when it comes to, there's a lot of components to grief, right? But how can addressing that identity loss component specifically during the grieving process help the individual heal and move forward?
I think it's really it's important to recognize that we define, if you like, our sense of ourself and identity through A, what our attitude and mindset and stance is towards our own relationship with ourselves. That's something that often people don't think about, and they come to therapy saying, "I don't like me, fix me, please." Point is to turn to yourself with compassion and care and self-care. And the other component is that we develop a sense of who we are through what we believe others think of us and feel about us. So I think not reconstructing your identity is an inside job. So taking some time to reflect, to journal. I journal every day, actually. I just check in and notice how I'm treating myself, how I'm thinking about myself, how I'm feeling about myself, and how critical am I being, or how kind am I being? Just spotting them. Taking time to observe, I guess, and to perhaps spot when you're being, when one is being very judgmental or very critical or very dismissive of the lived experience of that identity loss. And to kind of come back, sort of tune in and think about, well, if I think about what matters to me now and who I want to be now, what does that translate into? What small act of self-care can I prioritize today in that state of self-compassion to rebuild? And it'll be all sorts of things. It'll be things that are meaningful personally. It'll be things that are fulfilling socially. So maybe doing a ritual to honor your loved one, to cherish them. It will be feeling that you're making some kind of meaningful change and contribution. Because we know that our mental health is very subjective. And we know that to feel that we're in a state of coherence and equilibrium, we need to get to be the person we want to be. And nobody can do that for us, right? They can't fix that for us. We have to nurture that from within. So I think reflection and observation and just taking time. In my book, there are quite a few simple exercises with lots of questions to invite the readers to notice how self-accepting they are. And if not, why not?
Oh, it's fantastic. That's great to hear that.
Oh, thank you, Nikita. That's very nice to hear. Appreciate it.
And I was going to ask you actually, but you already shared a tool that you offer in the Lost Prescription for this situation, but are there any other ones as well for maybe experiencing identity loss during grief that you offer in your book as well?
Yeah, I think one really simple prescription that I offer is invite the reader to take a moment to imagine that they are watching their life story, Nikita's wonderful life on the screen. Right, we've gone to the cinema and we're watching your life story until today, until the point of today. And I invite the reader to kind of try and be objective and humane about it and notice what do they see of their life story? What do they see of how they've conducted the character that is them in the film? What do they make of it? How do they feel about that character? And what would they say at the intermission? Would they say something positive or something negative? And I really like that exercise. I know when I did it for myself in my own therapy, it just reminds you to see your own story just like you would anybody else's, and to be respectful and humane about it.
That
I think
is.
being the observer is very powerful. It gives you a lot of opportunity to say, oh, actually, when I'm being me, I'm really not very nice, or I shut down, or I don't want to talk about it. But when I put it on a screen and I pretend I'm somebody else and I observe it, I can be a little bit nicer about it all. And I play around with it. So I hope that might be helpful to your listeners.
Oh, absolutely. I can already imagine. Even to me, that sounds helpful because, I'm sure a lot of people can relate. Sometimes you tell your friend a piece of advice and you look at them and you're like, oh, look at how amazing you are. You're so much better than what you think. And we're often not able to give that to ourselves because it's very hard to be accurate in our own self-reflection. But when you're able to project it in your head onto like a screen, like you're looking at somebody else, you're looking at a character, not yourself, it becomes so much easier to see yourself in a more positive light, to give yourself more grace. And I think it's absolutely wonderful the way that you worded it and the kind of analogy that you're giving so people are able to visualize it more easier. I think that is a fantastic way to go about that and dealing with that self-reflection.
I'm glad you think that. I think one of the things that often happens, I notice, is people might be surrounded by really lovely friends, but they won't necessarily really share what it's like for them, because they don't want to be doom and gloom. They don't want to be the person that brings down the mood. They don't, if they're often with young men, we have a huge problem with young men's mental health in the UK. They feel that
Right.
they might become part of the joke,
Yeah.
that they might be kind of seen as a bit weak. And it's so important to find those key people, those few people, normally a sort of, handful of people that you can just be yourself with and let yourself share your story and your experience. And they will really give you feedback. They'll really contribute positively to that identity creation. I always encourage people to open up to the right people,
Yes, that is always something that is extremely important in
Yeah.
any stage of life, especially during the grieving process, I believe. And finally, what's one crucial piece of advice that you believe everyone should keep in mind when they're navigating the grieving process?
Yeah, to be in a state of self-compassion. That I think is the fundamental, that's the key. And in state of compassion, you can turn to your physical health and your mental health, your social health and your spiritual health, and you can be kind to yourself. And to recognize, sorry, that's two, isn't it? To recognize that it's an unfolding story and you don't know how you're going to feel tomorrow or how you're going to feel in an hour, and just be in that state of openness and acceptance and care for you. So you're a
Right.
human being. Human condition is tough, isn't it? Really horrible things happen to really good people, and there's no sense in it, but we have to learn to move through it.
Right,
I think
moving.
compassion. Yeah.
Moving through that uncertainty, but always trying to give yourself that space to be kind to yourself is extremely important, right?
And that can be translated into all sorts of things, whether it's a moment where you allow yourself to distract yourself, or whether it's a moment where you need to tune into your grief more, or whether you need to do something creative, or you need to just have a really lovely meal. Whatever it is, everybody will have their own daily dose of compassion, whatever it is. I think it's
Absolutely.
really important. I
It
really do.
is, of course. I absolutely agree with you there. And I think, once again, it's really great that, your book, The Lost Prescription, that's coming out, is trying to address something that really needs to be addressed and often isn't in society, even though it's so widespread. And yeah, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time, to speak with me about this, to speak with the Trauma and Mental Health Report about this, and for your expertise in grief and trauma counseling. It was really amazing to speak with you today and get an insight into the grieving process and how, while it's complicated, it's still manageable and there are ways to work through it. And like you said, it's a lifelong thing that we have to experience, but it does become easier as time goes on. It does become kind of easier to manage, and there will be bad days, but there will also be good days. And I really look forward to reading your newly published book, in its entirety. What I read of it was fantastic, and I definitely want to read more. I think it has so much value, and yeah, I will be keeping up with it.
I'm really grateful for the chance to meet you and to talk about it, and hope it gives your listeners a little bit of a key reminder to be kind to themselves and to check in.
Absolutely. You've reached the end of this episode with the Trauma and Mental Health Report podcast. Thanks for joining us. Connect with us at trauma.blog.yorku.ca. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, or LinkedIn. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and newsletter to see our latest content. See you at the next episode.